21. Tariana. She'd said goodbye to Mickey as they'd exited the camp. The resignation in his expression and the hollowness in Quintus's shattering her heart. She'd managed to keep her tears in check, but once she'd stumbled back into the command tent, great, gasping sobs had torn from her chest. The world was so incredibly cruel, and she wanted to scream at the gods for allowing it to be so, wanted to scream at herself for her part in this particular cruelty. Because Hegeria's marked healers had the power to help Mickey. And what did it say about her that she chose keeping a secret over her friend ever walking again? And for what? The shifter had told her to watch, to learn, to be ready to strike. But what did knowing everything there was to know about the legions matter if she kept hesitating to strike against them? "Why did you choose me, Midoriya?" she whispered to her goddess. "I'm not suited to this. I don't know what I'm doing. Anyone would have been a better choice than me." But no answer came. Footsteps at the entrance to the tent caught her attention, and she looked up to see Amarin approaching with a steaming cup. "Some tea, lass?" he said, not commenting about the fact she sat on the floor. "You're upset about Mickey, I take it?" Tariana gave a tight nod, knowing that if she spoke, her voice would crack. "He's known adversity all his life, Tariana. He'll be all right."
"And Quintus?"
Amarin sighed, then sat next to her, toying with the buckle of his sandal. The bronze skin of his hands was marked with age and use, and around his wrists were faded scars that suggested he'd spent time in shackles at some point in his life.
"Time will tell how Quintus fares. It's good of you to have volunteered to take him on, Tariana."
"He's my friend."
His mouth quirked.
"He's your enemy."
"That too." They sat in silence for a time, listening to the patter of rain on the canvas above. Then Amarin spoke.
"I was part of the last remaining rebel forces in Cybele. Fought against the Empire's legions for years before they finally ground us down. Anyone who survived was forced into indenture. The Senate sold most off to civilians, but they kept me because I was learned and, they believed, young enough to be redirected from my rebellious roots."
"Were they right?" she asked, curious to learn more about this man whom she'd never known to talk about himself.
"No."
He huffed out a breath.
"And yes."
She waited for him to say more, and sure enough, he continued.
"Indenture is nothing more than slavery, with the nebulous promise of freedom, if only you work hard enough to achieve it. And being prisoner to it only fueled the rebellion in my heart. My belief that the Empire was an evil that needed to be driven out of Cybele, because with the Senate in control, my people would never be free."
To Tariana, that seemed an impossible dream. The province of Cybele was thoroughly under the Empire's control, and even a whisper of rebellion would be immediately curbed, likely with violence. But she said nothing.
"I dreamed of striking a great blow to the Empire, of putting my blade in the heart of a senator, of showing them that I had not been quelled. So I bided my time and forced myself to become a model servant. And, lo and behold, I learned that I was to be given to the legatus of the newly minted legion who had just graduated from Campus Lessendor."
"Marcus."
Amarin nodded.
"Everyone was talking about him. The prodigy of Lessendor, they called him. the brightest mind to have ever graduated. Scores unlike had ever been seen in Lessendore's testing, and equally competent in the field. And oh, did they have plans for him. To groom him and the 37th to be the ultimate weapon, one they could use to conquer the last remaining free nations of the East, and one who they could use to quell any rebellion that dared to rear its head. The sharpest weapon in their arsenal.
Her blood chilled, because that was exactly how it had gone.
Knowing all these things, I resolved to kill him at first opportunity,
Amarin said,
and in doing so, to strike a greater blow to the Empire than I dared to dream possible.
She gaped at him, barely able to believe these words were coming from the man who'd fought to keep Marcus alive during his breathing attack, who'd told her that he'd kill her if anything happened to Marcus.
When the day came that I was to be presented to him, I managed to hide a knife on my person. I was a trained warrior, but they'd either forgotten or believed that I was assimilated. Either way, they'd never see the blow coming.
He gave a slight shake of his head.
I was ready, so very ready. And they led me into the room to meet this prodigy, this commander, this warrior that all of Celandriel was talking about, and...
And? Tariana pressed, her pulse racing.
And I found a boy instead.
Amarin huffed out a laugh that had no humor in it.
12 years old, skinny as a bird, and so short his head didn't reach my shoulder. And though I had opportunity, I didn't reach for my blade.
It's good that you couldn't kill a child. She couldn't even imagine doing so herself. Amarin laughed, and there was a coldness to it.
That had nothing to do with it. Salandor's legions slaughtered my people's children, and I would have been glad to return the blow. No. The reason I didn't kill him was that I believed it would be a waste of my one opportunity. That they were all mad fools to think this boy such a powerful weapon. That I was better to use the access being his servant would give me to take a life that would make a difference.
But you didn't. She scowled, anger flooding her. You what? Developed so much affection for Marcus and the other boys that you gave up on Sibal? On rebellion?
Far from it, he answered. As I looked for an opportunity to strike my blow, my ambition only grew, especially when I realized that the Senate had been right about him. And it was then I resolved that my blow would not fall upon a single man, but upon the Empire, and that my weapon wouldn't be a blade.
Tariana's heart skipped, but before she could press Amarin further, sandals thudded against wood, and Marcus said,
"We do have stools, you know."
Scrambling to her feet, she muttered, "Uncomfortable stools. When you build your fortress, you should really invest in better furniture, with cushions." Quintus stepped from behind Marcus.
"I hear you and me are to be tight as ticks again, Tariana."
"If you'll all excuse me,"
Amarin murmured,
"I'll see to securing dinner."
"Thanks, Amarin," Quintus said. "I could use some grub. It has been a day."
Marcus glowered at him.
"I already regret this decision."
The jaunty salute Quintus gave in response made Tariana's chest tighten, because there was no humor in his eyes, only a haunted hollowness. This all an act to cover his grief. One of the men on duty chose that moment to step into the tent,
immediately looking to Marcus.
Your presence is required, sir.
I'm in the middle of something. Get Felix to deal with it.
It's the Tribunus who is asking for you, sir. He said to tell you that a magnolia has bloomed, but that the blossom is wilting quickly.
All the blood drained from Marcus's face.
Stay with her, he said to Quintus. I need to go.
Then he all but bolted from the tent. Turning to Quintus, she asked, what in the underworld was that about? Do you know the code?
Yeah, he answered, expression thoughtful. It means things are about to get interesting.